It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law. We'd love to hear from you if you'd like to call in. But Wes is with us by himself this morning. Good morning, Wes.
Just me today. Good morning, Ben.
All right. What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about construction litigation. You know, before we before we got on the air, we were talking about basketball a little bit. So this time of year, if my young basketball team has had a good year, I always like to give them a little bit of props on the on the radio.
Sure,
so
sure.
Why not loosen it up a little bit?
Yeah.
I coached again this year, 11 and 12 year old team, and we just finished our season last week, and we had an undefeated season.
Mm-hmm.
Great kids, listeners, easy to coach.
Mm-hmm.
They put it all on the court, won the regular season undefeated. Won the championship, the tournament. So very proud of those 11, 12-year-olds.
Great. And what was
great
the team?
Kids. The Moorhead City Heat.
Moorhead City. Moorhead,
it's, just it's just wreck, you know, here in, in Moorhead City. So we played, you know, Beaufort teams and Downey's teams and Newport teams and, you know, kind of just this general area. But it was fun. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah. Andrew Foster helped you out with
it. Andrew is my assistant coach. Yeah. So, yeah, if any tax issues come up on the sideline, he's good to go on that, you know. But so we had a good season. It's always fun to continue to give back. And then
so those kids had to declare their shoe contract.
That's right.
For tax purposes.
Yep.
That's right.
And then where I played down at Furman University, man, we were all excited this year because they were they were right there as far as being one of the best teams in the Southern Conference.
Yeah, that didn't go so well yesterday.
And they lost the first round to a team that they had beat twice by like 15 points each time. Just could not throw it in the ocean. So
who was it, UNCG? Was
there UNCG one? Played ETSU, East Tennessee State, last night for the championship, and ETSU won by about, I think, 5 points. So that's our Southern Conference contingent.
Will they be a bracket buster? Probably not.
I was impressed with them last night. I was. They could be. They could be. So anyway, UNCG will go to the NIT. Furman was number three. They might get into the NIT because they lost first round. They probably won't. So they might have another postseason tournament to get into. But anyway, my Furman Paladins have been bad for a long time, Ben. So I just want them to get over the hump.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about. I know I'm getting set to remodel, so we have a contractor in place. So what do we need to know?
Sure. Well, you know, I deal with construction litigation cases quite frequently. Seems like we always have several of those going on. And you know, these cases come in all different shapes and sizes. You know, sometimes it's issues where I'm representing the general contractor or a subcontractor who's not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a situation where the owner of the home who's having the renovation done or the construction done is not happy with the contractor. Sometimes it's situations where the home is finished and there are issues. There may be water leaks. There may be some rot that's been found. There may be, you know, electrical problems. It could be anything. So, you know, I'm on both sides of these cases, and there's a lot of law as it relates to this, and navigating these issues and taking the right step as we go forward with regard to these construction cases is very important. So, you know, probably the most common type of situation that I deal with would be, you know, the property owner has detected some type of issue with the home. And a lot of times here in Carteret County with our storms, they end up being, you know, water related, water infiltration, those type things. And, you know, the question is then, you know, what do you do about it? Well, when I sit down with the client or speak with the client the first time with regard to the issue, you know, the first question is, when did you learn about it? When was the home finished? And the reason why is because there are statute of limitations that come into play here that are pretty important. The first one is the statute of repose, which is a 6-year statute from the date that the CO was issued, the certificate of occupancy. So if you have an issue with a newly constructed home that you learn about after 6 years from that CO being issued, well, you don't have a claim against the general contractor.
Right.
Unless that general contractor came back out and tried to fix something, and that may have revived the statute of limitations. But if the contractor had not come back out, then that 6-year statute of repose is really a hard and fast rule with regard to, you know, your claims. You know, now, the idea there is, okay, if you've got a serious problem with the home,
right,
you're probably going to learn about it within 6 years if you're paying attention at all.
Yeah, I know there are some things. I know even in our case, I think we found some soffits not properly installed, but
right,
not until later,
right,
until after that period of time.
Right.
And that 6 years, that doesn't mean that's a warranty. I mean, it just means you have a cause. You may have a cause of action. Right?
Yeah, and that brings up another issue. People get confused about that. 1 year warranty. I mean, mm-hmm, a lot of people hear about, oh, that he gave me a 1 year warranty. He gave me that's all I've got is a 1 year warranty. That's what the contractor told me. Well, what that basically means is it's just generally accepted in the trade that if you have some kind of issues within 1 year, then the contractor will come back, like nail pops, or maybe there's some trim that dried out and needs to be recalked and painted, that type of thing. But that doesn't preclude one's rights to have claims beyond that 1 year in the event there is like a material defect with regard to the home,
mm-hmm,
or things that even that did not get completed correctly. So, you know, if for the homeowner, if you see, you know, some type of evidence of what could be a bigger problem,
mm-hmm,
you know, like maybe you've got paint that's bubbling, or you've got, you know, an issue where you've got some hardwood floor that's buckling around a door or something like that, that may indicate that there is a bigger water infiltration problem, for example.
Right.
Well, have someone who knows what they're looking at, look at it closely, and so we know exactly the extent of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just patch it up and, you know, put lipstick on it, make it look better, because it could be that there's a bigger problem that is, you know, a cancer in your home and is, mm-hmm, growing. And, you know, if the significant problem is found after 6 years from the CO being issued, then you're not going to have any legal rights at all. And your homeowner's insurance is not going to cover it, because, mm-hmm, they'll come in. Most likely they would come in and see that this is not as a result of some type of incident. This, mm-hmm, wasn't because of a storm. This was something that's been going on for years, and it goes back to the original contractor. Your claim is against the contractor. Well, if you're outside of 6 years, you have no claim.
Yeah.
So really pay attention, you know, to those kind of things.
And so that's for new homeowners, then, but then say in the first 5 years to maybe reinspect, get a full reinspection.
Sure. That's a good idea. I mean, you know, you need to pay attention to your property, you know, mm-hmm, when you move into it. And if there are things that aren't right, then you need to deal with them, you know, pretty quickly.
Okay. Let's start with that period. So you're in that period then.
Right.
What is your course of action?
Well, there's one more statute.
Okay.
So we've got the 6 year statute of repose,
mm-hmm,
and then we have the 3 year statute of limitations, which would run from the date that you knew or should have known of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more subjective. When should you have learned that the roof was leaking? When should you have known that there was, you know, a significant issue of rot in your walls?
Mm-hmm.
When should you have known of these things? Well, a lot of times these cases turn, as far as the statute of limitation goes, on letters, emails, faxes, things like that that were sent by the homeowner, even a text,
mm-hmm,
to the general contractor. Hey, Mr. General Contractor, you know, as I mentioned to you before, we have significant, you know,
right,
water issue around this window,
mm-hmm,
and I'm concerned about it. Well, what's the date of that email? Well, that probably is the date that you should have known. Even if it's just one window or one area,
right,
of the roof, you know, the cases in North Carolina are pretty much lean toward, if you have any indication of there being a more significant problem, then the first time that you knew of any aspect of that problem is when that statute of limitations began to run.
Now, if that all 3 years occurs before the end of the statute of repose, of that,
right,
first 6 years, is that, right, still the limitation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Once you hit the 6 years, all bets are off.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing at all.
Right.
Unless someone's come back out and the issue is with the work that they did when they came back out.
Right.
That could revive it.
Mm-hmm.
But the 3 years runs from the date that you knew or should have known, no matter what.
Okay.
So it could be before the expiration of the 6 year period of time.
Okay. What's your step though, if you find something there?
Right. So, I mean, obviously, as we mentioned on this program multiple times, when we're dealing with litigation issues, we would try to get them resolved without having to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
So in most cases, depending on the circumstances, is probably the best course of action for the attorney to write a demand letter, of course, to the general contractor, with regard to what we think the issues are. Now, it could be, depending on where we are with the issue and the timing and these type things, it could be that we want to get an engineer involved, or it could be that we want to get a general contractor involved and get some opinions about what the issues are, so that we can address all the issues and then make a demand on the general contractor, maybe get them back out there and get the issues resolved. So I can tell you, in most cases as well, a general contractor or a contractor is going to be more amenable to trying to fix the issue as opposed to having to pay your other guy to fix it, because usually the GC can do that for a lot cheaper than someone else could do it for.
Okay. Now, does that start another clock or anything? If you send a demand letter, does that start any other kind of concern there?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, you know, a good lawyer is going to know where we are on the statute of repose and statute of limitations. So if we're down to the last day on the 6 years, we're not writing letters. We're filing lawsuits.
Okay. Well, and before we take a break, let's talk to Ray in New Bern here with a question. Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question about leasing. My daughter was at ECU, just graduated in December, got a job in Raleigh, and has moved to Raleigh. She had signed a year's lease last August, and we've been trying to get someone to sublease the apartment, and haven't had any luck. I was just wondering what my options are as far as paying this. I've been paying for 3 months, and with you know, she's in Raleigh. Is there any legal? What's my legal? Do I have to pay the whole thing or what?
Right. Great question. So obviously, if there's a year lease, then the lessee is going to be responsible for the terms of the lease, for the rent throughout the term of the lease. And that's kind of where you are right now. Obviously, you're paying for this and you haven't been able to sublease it.
Was she the only one on the lease?
There's two other girls in the home.
Who signed the lease, though? Just her or the others?
All three girls.
Yeah. So are they sharing in that? Are they sharing in the rent?
Excuse me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So you're more concerned about the, I guess, one third that you're covering. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So they're still in the home, though?
The other two young ladies are still in the home. Yes, sir.
Right. Well,
contract housing in college.
Yeah. That's the way it goes. I mean, yes. I mean, basically, you're in a situation where, if she is on the lease, then she has an obligation, you know, to pay. In the event there's a failure to pay, then the landlord is then going to bring an eviction proceeding, potentially, which doesn't really bother your daughter very much, but certainly bothers the other two roommates. So it could, you know, just force the other two to come up with the money to cover it. Or another roommate.
So they may not be feeling very compelled now to do that.
That's right, because since you're covering it. Now, that's kind of playing hardball with our roommates here, but still, I mean, you could do that to just stop paying and, you know, see how they react with regard to that, because they are getting the benefit of the lease. Now, the leasing company, landlord, has an obligation to mitigate its damages, meaning in the event it was just your daughter, then if they were able to place someone else in the unit, then they would only be entitled to damages against your daughter for the difference between what they'd be able to rent the property for and what the actual rent was on the contract. But that's not really the case.
Yeah, and it was one lease. It was not three separate ones, because I know that's how my son's was. They were separate leases.
They may have been three separate leases.
Yeah,
they really
typically in a college housing. That's what I was wondering, because you know, they're separate, so the other girls may not have there may not be an action against them. They have separate leases.
Yeah,
so they're leasing their bedroom in a common area.
Yeah. Yes. Have you communicated with these other tenants to see if they could find a friend to move in with them?
Well, my daughter has. She's advertised. It sounds to me like everywhere that the Greenville area, including Craigslist, the local intranet for the school. We had a couple people that were interested, but they just, and I even reduced the share, reduced the rent to try to get them, but I just couldn't get anybody to sign on.
Yeah. All right. So
I did read somewhere where the landlord has an obligation to try to find somebody to rent. Is that true?
Not under this scenario, no, because we already have tenants in the property. So, I mean, the landlord's not going to be under an obligation to go find a third person to move in with two others. It's just that if the unit were vacant, then they couldn't just sit with it vacant for that period of time and say, you owe me the full amount of rent if normally they would be able to lease it otherwise.
Have to put it on the market.
Yeah, put it on the market, advertise it, that type thing to mitigate their damages.
Right. Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that where you are in this situation is that if you let these other roommates know that you're going to stop making the payments and they're going to have to cover that, then that's going to, basically kind of smoke them out where they're going to have to go find someone else or come up with the extra money. Now, the effect of that is that the landlord could get aggressive and move for ejectment, and that doesn't bother your daughter because she's already out of there, as I mentioned before, but it does obviously concern the other two. That might require them to come up with the extra money. Don't know. We would have to see. The risk there would be that to your daughter, I'm just talking about the pure legal risk, would be that if a summary ejectment action is brought, there would also be an action potentially for damages against all three, because I'm assuming that they're all three on the lease. I think Ben had a great question. Is it three separate leases or is it are they all
together?
I've
been down this road.
Yeah. My children are 11 and 12, so I haven't dealt with many college leases yet.
They work you over on those leases now.
Yeah. So, the landlord could then bring an action for damages, which would potentially be the rent that wasn't paid. There's probably a late fee provision and then probably a provision in it that allows them to get attorney's fees up to 15% of the amount, that's sought. So there's a little bit of risk there. So there's not any magic tool in the tool shed here to just allow your daughter to get off the hook.
All right. Thank you for your call, Ray. We'll have more to come in a moment on Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station. Welcome back here to Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins, and Wes wanted to follow up a little bit with Ray's question.
Yeah, Ray had a great question. Ben and I were talking off the air there about how these leases are set up, and I understand that it's probably three separate leases for maybe a space within this apartment complex. And I would say if it's set up in that way, then probably the landlord would, under our statutes, have an obligation to mitigate those damages. Mm-hmm. So notwithstanding the fact that you have a unit that is designed for three and there are just two there.
Right.
If they're separate leases, if this landlord has the ability to advertise and to fill that spot, then they have an obligation to do so. I don't know if they're in the practice of that or not. They may just say, this is the unit we have.
Right.
And it's good for one, two, or three. And that's just the way it is. But if it's set up in that way, three separate leases, really, leasing the area, but also, kind of your bedroom, then they would have that option or obligation to mitigate. And if they don't do it, then the damages against, Ray's daughter there would be, diminished or reduced by the reasonable rent that they could have gotten otherwise. So again, kind of the proof is in the pudding too. I would want to read the lease agreements or at least his daughter's lease agreement to see what the language is, but there could be an option there.
Okay. All right. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more here and finish up with Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins, attorneys at law. You can always find them online at harveyallencollins.com and also 726-9050. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. We're going to wrap up.
Yeah, we just have, what, two or three minutes, four minutes left. So Ray had a great question about landlord-tenant law. That was very interesting, and we appreciate that. We were talking about construction litigation and talking about these different statute of limitations and statute of repose.
And you were sending a demand letter.
Yeah, sending a demand letter.
As one of the first steps. And
that's exactly right. So I'm representing a property owner who has an issue with regard to the home. The general contractor has not been willing to fix these issues. So we're contacting the general contractor, identifying what the problems are. We may have gotten involved another expert of some sort, maybe a professional engineer, maybe another general contractor, someone to evaluate what the issue is so they could identify it for us and we could describe it appropriately. And then letting the general contractor who built the home or who's did the renovation, whatever, know of these issues and hopefully getting them back in the fold so that the things can be fixed.
Now, so, does the homeowner, we don't probably don't have time to go into this completely, but does the homeowner have any responsibility if the general contractor doesn't pay a sub?
Yes. That's the whole lien law. There would be potentially a lien on funds, has to be filed within 120 to 180 days. There could be a claim by the sub against the property owner, but what we would more likely see would be a lien on title that would tie up the property so that it'd be difficult to close, let's say, on a final loan, close out your construction loan to a final final financing, permanent financing. And then if that lien's standing in the way and hasn't been resolved yet, those funds are at least going to have to be paid into the clerk of court and be held until that's all worked out. So yes, there could be an entanglement with regard to a subcontractor, even though we did not even have a contract with that subcontractor.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a whole, we don't have enough time to get in that today. We can talk about that next week.
It's kind of like a three-way player trade. I mean, you're going to end up going back against the contractor on that too, right?
The general philosophy there is very basic. General contractor, subcontractors, could be, you know, an engineer, could be an architect. We've all put our time and effort into the construction of this building or this house or whatever it is. So the law protects the rights of those who have put their time and effort and energy into the construction of the home, and who have not been paid.
Okay.
To allow them to put a lien on title. And we can talk about those ramifications next week. So as to try to increase the chances that everyone gets properly paid. Now, sometimes you get into a conflict about the amount of the bill or the work was problematic or whatever it might be. So we can discuss that
next
week.
Coming up next week here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins.